Chapter 9. A Walk in the Woods. He felt stiff all over, but was more refreshed by far than he had been the previous night. Brannis rolled over onto his stomach and pushed himself up to his hands and knees, stretching out his limbs and working out the tightness that had set in after resting from the long day of fighting and hiking. Climbing to his feet, he looked around the impromptu camp that he and his men had set up the night before. He was the first of the group to awaken. Not so uncommon an occurrence, as rising before dawn was far more to his habit than his recent oversleeping, though a few men had begun to stir at the noise Brannis had made in getting up. Brannis made a quick count of his men and found none missing, no small blessing considering the losses they had suffered yesterday. Rubbing the sleep from his eyes, he walked as quietly as he could to the cottage to see how Iridan was faring. The door to Rashan's cottage opened outward and had a ratty bit of rope for a handle. Grasping the rope, Brannis slowly pulled the door open and peeked inside. Within, he saw Rashan bent over Iridan's resting form, his back to the door. He showed no reaction to Brannis entering. Brannis stepped inside and closed the door behind him, taking care not to shut it too loudly and disturb Iridan. He leaned over the hermit's shoulder to see what he was doing.
Brannis. Who is this?
Iridan's voice called out weakly, little more than a dry-sounding whisper. Brannis smiled down at his friend, whose eyes were open just a crack, but who was awake and aware enough to have recognized him. Rashan brushed a few strands of Iridan's longish blonde hair out of his face, then turned to Brannis. He allowed his patient's friend to introduce him as he saw fit. He's a hermit who lives in Kelvi Forest, north of where we were camping. We carried you from the site of the battle after you fell and happened upon him. He offered to help take care of you, and we accepted since none of us really know how to treat an ether burn, Brannis told him. By the by, that was quite the light and fire show you put on back there. Please, do not do it again.
I felt like I was floating. I know it was probably just a dream, but I feel like I was just drifting along. It was nice. My head did not feel like someone was stabbing me in the temple every time I blink.
Iridan winced as if even talking was causing his headache to bother him. Well, we carried you for the better part of yesterday on a litter we made from one of the tents you did not incinerate. That probably explains the floating.
I feel like I've been trampled by a horse, though. I have scant practice at carrying sorcerers around, and my muscles have decided to rebel in protest.
Probably.
Hey, Brannis.
Yes?
Remember just before the fighting started? I told you I would get you back for that comment about me looking like a zombie. Consider it payback.
Iridan smiled weakly and closed his eyes for a moment.
Can I get a little more water, please?
Of course, Rashan answered softly. Brannis noticed the half-empty bowl next to the hermit. Rashan lifted Iridan's head and brought the bowl up to his lips. The sorcerer seemed to drink very little, for there was nearly as much in the bowl after his drink as before. He licked his lips afterward, as if to moisten them. They were cracked and dry, and looked as if they might split and bleed just from the dehydration. It was understandable, of course. Iridan had baked much of the moisture from his body during the episode yesterday when he had been overcome by drawing in more ether than he could safely control. He was lucky he had not burned away more than just water. It would not have been the first time an overreaching sorcerer was charred to ash by his own power. Iridan laid his head back down and sighed. As he drifted into sleep or meditation, Brannis could not tell which, Rashan told him that he had forbidden Iridan the use of ether until he recovered fully. Brannis nodded at the wise precaution and left to see about getting his men ready.
"Do you still plan to leave today?" Rashan asked in a low voice, catching Brannis by the arm as he exited the cottage.
Of course, all the more so now that Iridan has awakened. There should be no doubt now that he will recover. He just needs to build his strength back up. We can still carry him, Brannis replied, sounding optimistic. Rashan looked back at him, nodding to himself and looking pensive, as if the response had been expected. The hermit followed Brannis outside.
Very well, Rashan replied. I will accompany you then. I do not approve of your decision, but I will come along to see that he is properly tended.
What? Why? No, we will be fine on our own.
though I thank you for taking care of him. Iridan is a dear friend of mine, and I am grateful for all you have done, but we cannot ask you to come along. Fine, then it is settled, Rishan replied, smirking, and turned to walk away.
Huh?
What?
Did I just miss something?
Brennus asked, confused.
Oh, I'm going to see about finding you something for Dawn Feast besides those hideous field rations you've brought along,
Rishan told Brennus, ignoring the intent of the question.
That is not what I meant, and you know it, Brennus called after him.
Rishan turned back to look at him, frowning, and brought a finger up to his lips. Brennus had not realized how loudly he had just spoken. Brennus asked again in a lower voice,
What do you mean it is settled?
Well, you said you could not ask me to come. I had already decided to come before then, and I had not sought your permission, nor had you said I was not welcome. So it sounded like a closed deal. Do not worry. I am very little bother, and I can find my way quite well. I'm sure that before you reach the safety of your home, you shall be glad I was along.
With that, he once again turned his back to Brennus and headed off deeper into the woods.
Brennus frowned at Rishan's back but did not say anything, watching as the hermit receded from view. There was something that bothered him about Rishan, but he could not quite say what it was. His demeanor was light and casual, and he seemed to ignore anything he found inconvenient. Things like not being asked to accompany Brennus's men, but deciding to anyway. Brennus could not help but wonder at the quick mind the hermit had displayed, subtly manipulating him into a situation where he would feel silly objecting to Rishan's offer to stay with Iridan until he had time to recover. Rishan was certainly right about one thing. He was little bother. Since they had arrived at the hermit's cottage, Rishan had probably not said a handful of words to anyone besides Brennus and perhaps Iridan. The hermit did not partake in meals with them, kept out of sight for the most part, and seemed to prefer wandering the woods to their company. He wondered what in the hermit's past might have engendered such an aversion to human companionship. They broke camp near noontime, which was later than Brennus would have liked, but all of them seemed to have needed the extra time to recover from the after effects of their long day of fighting and carrying heavy packs through the woods. Iridan was conscious and able to sit up on his own by then, but his legs wobbled under him when he tried to walk. So it was resolved that they would still have to carry him, for the time being. The young sorcerer was feeling well enough to crack a few jokes at his own expense, promising to return the favor and carry each of them in turn once he had recovered. The very idea of Iridan carrying anyone was rather comical. The sorcerer had long been the object of jests regarding women having thicker arms than his, most often at times when he seemed a bit too full of himself, or started showing off with his magic. Given Iridan's weakened state, though, the survivors let his boasts pass unchallenged. Brennus led them east from the hermit's cottage. The trees of the Kelvi Forest were sparse enough in that region that no blazed path was needed for them to make good progress. True to his word, Rishan was little trouble to the soldiers. He hung back a ways, staying rather near the pair of men who carried Iridan at any given time, never letting the sorcerer out of his sight. Still, there were whisperings among the men as the day wore on. Some had begun to take note of the unnatural silence that surrounded the hermit's footsteps, despite the din every other pair of feet made among the twigs and small plants that were in abundance on the forest floor. He also had a strange look in his eye whenever one of the soldiers happened to meet his gaze. All who noticed this seemed to find an unusual intensity there, staring more into them than at them. Though his expression showed no such emotion to match. Brennus, at the head of the group, did not see any of it, though. The forest was easy terrain for trekking long distances on foot. Gently rolling hills graced with trees spaced far enough apart that one could walk a straight line at most times. There was a refreshing breeze that cooled the early afternoon air as they searched for a spot to rest and take a meal. All of them seemed grateful for the pause, when finally they came to a low hilltop shaded by tall oaks, and deemed that the time for an afternoon meal had arrived. The soldiers were tired from bearing the weight of their armor, and at turns carrying the recovering Iridan, and Brennus was carrying the swords of the fallen knights in addition to taking his turn in bearing his injured friend. From the hilltop, they could hear the murmuring of a stream not far off. And throughout the afternoon, men drank deeply from the few canteens that had remained after the battle against the goblins.
Dinaire, Kuhn, come with me, Brannis ordered, selecting two of the remaining conscripts from his battalion. Gather up the water skins and let us go find that stream.
Brannis loosened Massacre in its sheath in case they encountered any trouble while isolated from the main group.
Sir Lugrin, you are in charge in my absence. I hope not to be long about this.
Lugrin grunted in reply, nodding brusquely in acknowledgement.
The older knight watched as Brannis and the two soldiers left camp, laden with all the waterskins they had salvaged from the battlefield. The hermit, who seemed no worse for the day's journey, moved to check on Iridan. The sorcerer was feeling much improved since he had first awakened earlier that morning. His headache had subsided, and his thoughts felt clearer than they had since before his accident. Sitting up, he took one of the pieces of hard tack that the soldiers were eating and nibbled at it, trying both to placate his grumbling stomach and not to upset it by putting too much in after having eaten nothing for over a day.
"Well, it is good to see you feel like eating. Your body's recovering," the hermit commented, crouching down beside Iridan.
I know I must be truly hungry. This awful stuff is actually tasting good," the sorcerer replied between bites.
"Not to destroy your illusions, but you're just imagining. Those rocks you call rations do not taste like anything at all."
Maybe it is time we saw whether your mind is recovering as well as your body seems to be."
The hermit grabbed a twig from the ground nearby and broke off all the little forked branches that split from it, making it into a crude implement for writing in the dirt. He drew a square on the ground in front of Iridan, large enough to stand both feet in, and then divided it into smaller squares, a grid 8 squares by 8. Iridan watched curiously, his eyes widening in understanding as the hermit began drawing symbols in the 2 rows of squares closest to each of them.
"Your move," he told Iridan, and handed him the stick.
The hermit had drawn a chessboard on the ground.
"Let us see what is left in there."
He pointed a finger at Iridan's forehead. The sorcerer smiled, amused.
"Oh my, how does one play this game?" Iridan replied, his too innocent voice dripping with sarcasm.
"Oh, I think you shall pick up a rough idea within a few moves," the hermit said with a chuckle. "It is common knowledge that they teach young sorcerers to play this game to sharpen their wits. Let us see if this crazy woodsman can best one of the academy's finest."
Iridan said nothing in reply, but scuffed out one of his pawns and then redrew it in another square. He handed the stick back to the hermit with a smug look on his face. Iridan fancied himself a rather expert player of the game, even if Brannis had begun to trounce him regularly in recent summers. It was something of a mark of honor at the academy to be a good player. There were few opportunities to test magical skills in direct opposition. Dueling and anything of that sort was strictly regulated. So the game had become a sort of proxy duel that allowed students, and occasionally masters, to engage each other in battles of wits. The hermit took the stick and casually sketched a new pawn of his own, erasing one with his thumb, mirroring Iridan's play. It was the sort of bland, unimaginative move that Iridan would have expected of a merchant or tradesman, someone not much practiced in the game. He planned to enjoy beating the hermit and tried not to let his smile show, with limited success. It continued thus for a handful of moves, with the two men passing the stick back and forth in silence. The hermit handled himself much better than Iridan had initially expected, and he had found no clear advantage. He studied the board for several moments before deciding to try distracting his opponent.
"So who are you, anyway? All this time and you have not so much as given your name," he said, making a non-committal move and passing the stick to the hermit.
"Oh, I've already gone through that whole business with your friend Brannis. I have grown unaccustomed to giving my name. Talk to Brannis later if you're truly curious."
"I think he would explain things better than I."
"What sort of answer is that? If you've already told Brannis, what harm is there in telling me?"
Iridan found that the stick had somehow wandered back into his hand. The hermit had made his move while Iridan had been talking.
"None, really, I suppose."
Iridan waited.
"Well," he asked, "are you going to tell me then?"
He made another move,
a rather defensive one, then closed off what appeared to be an imminent attack by the hermit's rook, just to get the hermit to move while he talked, and passed him the stick.
"No, I think not. I shall let Brannis enlighten you when he decides to," the hermit replied.
"Are you sure you've played this game before?"
Irridan's attention was brought back more fully to the game, and he watched as the hermit took a decided advantage. The rook had been a diversion. Irridan saw now that he would lose in just a matter of a few moves.
"All right, let us try that again. I was distracted," Irridan snapped, upset with himself that his trick had backfired.
The hermit smiled and patiently rubbed out the drawn pieces and set the game up once again. The game resumed anew, this time with the hermit taking a more aggressive approach than he had in the first game. Irridan immediately found himself struggling to defend his pieces.
"From your accent, I take it you're originally from the Empire," Irridan probed, now genuinely curious about the hermit.
"What did you do before you left?"
"Oh, a number of things. Odd jobs and the like, for one of the highborn families. I would fix things, deliver messages, that sort of thing. Primarily, they had me working as a butcher. Eventually, I tired of it, the slaughtering of helpless animals. Mostly, I think I grew tired of all the blood. I felt that I just had to get the smell of it out of my nostrils, so I left."
"You just left?" Irridan stopped playing for the moment and made no moves, his attention fixed for the moment on the hermit.
"It was a thankless job. After one particularly long day's work, I decided I had enough and I just left."
He snapped his fingers. "Just like that. Not a word to anyone. I came to live out here. That was winters ago."
The hermit nodded back to the game, prompting Irridan to move. Sometime later, Brannis returned with the two soldiers who had accompanied him to refill the group's canteens. Brannis looked curiously at the two men sitting together, his best friend and the strange hermit that he did not quite trust yet, and went over to see what they were up to. Rashan turned toward Brannis as the knight approached him from behind.
"Well, your friend seems to have suffered no lasting effects of his unfortunate mishap, presuming that he was rather dim-witted before the incident," Rashan commented, smiling lopsidedly.
"Do not listen to him, Brannis. He is really good. I bet he would even give you a tough time of it," Irridan interrupted, defending his maligned wits from the hermit's sarcasm.
"Please," Rashan said. "I have never known a knight who could get out of his own way in a game of chess. They make a few moves and start whining about a draw if there's no obvious advantage right off."
"No offense."
"None taken," Brannis said. "I actually first learned the game at the academy, not the School of Arms. I spent several winters there before they gave up on me ever becoming a sorcerer. I know how to play both ways."
It was true that the two institutions had markedly different ways of playing the same game. To those at the Imperial Academy, chess was a game of wits to determine who was the better. They played by what they considered the pure rules, with all options available until one player was defeated or the game became stalemated. At the School of Arms, the game was used as a microcosm of a battlefield. Pawns were only considered expendable if there was a clear gain, and more important pieces were defended heavily, and rarely were they captured or lost intentionally for any strategic gain. Draws were common, often after only a handful of moves if neither player had gained an advantage. Headmasters presided over the game and judged performances based on territory, or a number of squares, that a player controlled, and what kind of casualties had been suffered. True victories, as the sorcerers saw them, rarely happened when squires played. The knighthood had long held that the game gave great insight into the mind of sorcerers and revealed the most important reasons why they never be given command of troops. Brannis decided to give the remainder of his men a bit more rest and indulge the hermit in his game. He was curious to discover what he could about their deeply layered companion.
"Maybe I can start piecing him together like a puzzle if I can see him from enough angles."
Brannis took Iridan's spot across from the hermit and quickly scribbled his pieces back in their starting locations, then put his opponent's pieces back, even drawing them upside down so they faced Rashan.
"Not too bad. You seem at least passingly familiar with the game," the hermit admitted. "I shall make the first move."
Brannis played Canix's defense,
an advanced and complicated opening sequence that looked to unbalance the board and give both players ample opportunity to attack. It was a test to see if Roshan had learned the game at any advanced level. As the hermit responded, Brannis noted that he took none of the standard attacks, but still seemed to be making strong plays and threatening his position at every turn. Not having seen any style of play Brannis was familiar with from either the Imperial Academy or the School of Arms, he carefully worked to a more neutral position. He then decided to play his usual manner, a long-term plan that did not look so much to score wins in pieces or get a particular gambit to work, but rather to gain the most use out of each of his pieces, gaining options and restricting his opponents. "Falling back to the knight's way, then?" Roshan commented as he saw Brannis' play grow less aggressive and threatening. "Not exactly," Brannis replied, exchanging one of his knights for one of the hermit's bishops. Several moves later, Roshan seemed to finally notice that Brannis had been subtly marginalizing his remaining bishop to the point where it was nearly useless to him. "Where did you learn that?" Roshan wondered aloud, shortly before scrubbing out his dirt-drawn king and admitting defeat. "I am not accustomed to losing, and I would like to know, what just happened?" "You lost. That happened." Brannis smiled at being able to play the same game the hermit liked to play with words, ignoring half the question to give an unhelpful answer to the rest. "A rematch, then," Roshan offered, and he began to set the board up again. "I do not think now is the time for another game. We have to get moving again," Brannis continued. Looking about the hilltop, he could see that most of the men had already finished eating their lunches and were just sitting or lying about, taking what rest they could. "They are tired, you know," Roshan said. "You're pushing them too hard. You will not make it back to the Empire like this. You will lose half your men to exhaustion." "We have no choice. If we do not get word to Cadran and arrange for reinforcements, those goblins could wipe out Corgan, or maybe Illard's Glen. We shall get horses once we cross into Cadran territory. Then it will be easier on everyone." "Very well, then," Roshan sighed. "Perhaps I can help you with something." The hermit turned his attention to the trees above and raised his right hand, palm up. Then he began making melodic, twittering noises, reminiscent of the calls of birds they had heard each morning they had been in Kelvi Forest. A few breaths later, a small sparrow flew down from the trees and landed on Roshan's outstretched hand. Roshan gently closed his hand over the bird, and he began stroking the back of its head with his thumb. Brannis and Iridan looked on in amazement, for the hermit had seemed to work no magic. The bird had merely come to his call. Brannis could tell that Iridan was resisting the urge to stretch his senses into the ether to confirm what he had seen, no doubt because he did not want to risk taxing his mind when he was just beginning to feel like himself again. Several soldiers who had seen the bird fly in now began gathering about, wondering what was going on. "Brannis," Roshan said quietly, seeming to avoid disturbing the bird, "where exactly do you want your message delivered? Mind you, somewhere where someone who would not be struck dumb seeing a bird delivering one might be found."
The capital, Cadrus," Brannis replied skeptically. "I guess at the palace. Someone from the Imperial Circle would likely find it."
"Very well. I know where that is. It should prove little trouble. Now I will need you to speak two messages. The first will be heard by whoever first finds the bird, and will need to tell them to whom the bird needs to be delivered. The second will be the true message, and you should choose someone who will not discount the word of a sparrow." Roshan could not help grinning at that. "Also, it should be someone who will recognize your voice, for sparrows cannot speak with one of their own," Roshan added, as if it were somehow natural that they should speak with a voice that was not their own. Brannis thought for a moment. Who should he send the bird to? Juliana was the first sorcerer who came to mind, as she often did, but she was young and not of high rank in the Imperial Circle. It might raise eyebrows if he sent such an important message to her instead of someone more senior. Brannis's father would certainly be respected enough to bear such news to the rest of the Inner Circle and to the High Command of the Knights, but he would sooner kiss a goblin than rely on his father to take his warning to heart.
Truly, the message would best have been delivered to his immediate superior, Sir Garibald, but he could hardly imagine the stodgy old knight conversing with a sparrow. At last, Brannis decided on his elder sister, Aloysia. She would most likely recognize his voice, though they spoke seldom to one another, and she carried a great deal of respect among her peers. As a bonus, it would seem all well and proper that his sister receive the message, rather than a sorceress to whom he had once been betrothed. Brannis nodded to Rashan that he was ready, and the hermit calmly held the sparrow up closer to Brannis's face. Feeling silly addressing a bird, Brannis began his first message. This bird bears a message for Aloysia Soloran of the Imperial Circle. You are hereby commanded to convey this messenger immediately to the lady's presence, for the matter is most urgent. Brannis looked expectantly at Rashan, and the hermit nodded in approval, holding up two fingers. It was time for the second message. To my sister Aloysia, I give greetings. This bird bears a message from Brannis Soloran, with news of the search in Kelvi Forest. The goblin presence is greater than we feared. We have confirmed the loss of Sir Farron's battalion with but two survivors, and my own command has suffered heavy casualties. There has been no word from Sir Denevere's battalion, but I fear it has been lost as well. The goblins are gathering in numbers, likely for an invasion of the Western Empire. I return to Cadrus in all haste. Brannis nodded to Rashan once more, and the hermit raised his hand quickly, releasing the sparrow, which flew away immediately, heading east. How did you do that? I did not see you use magic, Brannis asked, confused. I thought you could not see magic at all, so I do not find that surprising, the hermit replied sarcastically. He seemed to enjoy picking at Brannis's words. You know what I mean. You did not cast a spell. The bird just came when you called it. Small children have been doing bird calls since long before I was born. I doubt they relied on magic to do it. And the message? I suppose that was a child's trick as well, Brannis pressed, meaning to get answers from the mysterious hermit. Rashan always seemed to be acting helpful and speaking in circles. It was beginning to grate on his nerves, for he knew not whether the hermit was being playful or deceitful. Well, now you get to the meat of the question, so to speak. Yes, I've learned a few tricks over the winters. Any crazy old coot can talk to animals, but it takes some skill to get the animals to talk back. Rashan looked around to all the soldiers who were gathering their belongings, and then he began to walk eastward. Come on, we can afford a more leisurely pace now, but since you have no intention of indulging me in a second game, I suppose we should be on our way. Irridan was feeling much improved after having eaten, well enough to walk on his own, much to the relief of all those who had been taking turns bearing the litter that had carried him for a day and a half. The sorcerer chose to walk with Rashan, and the two conversed through the long hours of the journey that afternoon. It seemed to Brannis that the hermit had taken an unusual interest in Irridan, which gave further credence to his growing suspicion that Rashan had at least some minor training in sorcery, whether he would admit it or not. He could also not help but notice how similar the two were. Irridan was only the taller of the two by a little, and heavier only by grace of a healthy diet and little strenuous exercise. Both were thin-limbed and fair of complexion, though the hermit was far paler than appeared healthy. Rashan most likely saw Irridan as a kindred spirit, Brannis decided, one who made his way in life by wit and magic, just as the hermit seemed to do. The day turned foul some hours after the break for replenishing the group's water supply. The trees that had thoughtfully allowed the warm sunshine through their leaves to cheer them all day had now permitted the dark clouds that gathered above to soak them with a cold rain, more typical of the late autumn, but far less welcome. The storm had come on them suddenly, sneaking up from the west at their backs, unnoticed until they were caught up in its midst. The winds that brought the storm also blew the rain hard at their backs, the only blessing being that it gave them a tailwind and kept the rain from their faces. To the knights and soldiers wearing heavy armor with thick padding beneath, the rain soaked them and was absorbed in great quantities by their undergarments, chilling them and weighing them down even further under the weight of their packs. Irridan seemed to have the worst time of it, just recently having recovered the strength to walk on his own, worrying Brannis.
The hermit Roshan seemed entirely unconcerned and unbothered by the weather. As they traveled along the rolling forest terrain, they came to a shallow valley between hills where the rainwater had pooled and made mud of all the ground. Men grumbled as the ground sucked at their boots while water splashed into them, drenching their feet. Then a few of the men stopped, whispering to one another. Curiosity and gossip quickly brought the whole group to a standstill, with the first few who had stopped all staring in the direction of the hermit. Soon all eyes turned to Roshan, who stood with raised eyebrows, seeming to wait quietly for someone to mention why they were staring at him. One of the men pointed to the ground behind him, and the hermit turned and looked down. So did everyone else. There were no tracks. There was an uncomfortable silence as all eyes turned once more to the hermit. The commoner soldiers seemed to be extremely wary, unconsciously leaning away from the hermit, but not taking so much as a step away. Iridan seemed more surprised than wary, thinking that this was something he ought to have noticed, or at least felt, if magic was about. Brannis was the one to break the silence.
"Well, care to explain this?"
he asked, trying not to sound too accusatory. The hermit cocked his head to the side.
"Explain what? You really ought to try being more specific. You give me more credit than is my due if you think all is known to me."
"The footprints. Why are there none?"
"Is that specific enough for you?" Brannis said.
The foul weather had worn his patience thin.
"Ah, there we go, a proper question. Well, it seemed rather bothersome to trudge about in the mud, so I chose not to."
"Well, stop it. You are making us all uneasy, working strange magics without letting on that you are doing so. And now that I look closer, you are not even wet."
Roshan rolled his eyes and blew a long, weary sigh.
"Very well, I shall muck about in the mud with the rest of you. But I will not get rained on just for your peace of mind. I hate going about in wet clothes for no good reason."
And with no warning, the hermit sank a finger's breadth with a soft splash and a squish of mud. He crossed his arms over his chest and asked,
"Better?"
"All right, but let me know before you use magic again," Brannis said,
a little bothered by how easily the hermit performed such minor feats of magic. He had heard of woodland sorcerers before, those who called themselves druids, but he had been taught that they lacked any real talent with ether. Supposedly, they only drew on the ether in living plants, and very rarely the ether of animals. Such limitations combined with no organized training reputedly made them an insignificant force compared to the sorcerers that the academy trained. If Roshan was a druid, then druids were more adept than the masters at the academy had led on.
"All life is magic, Brannis. Shall I inform you each time I breathe?" the hermit asked.
It was a simple enough question, and the logic flowed right from Brannis's remembered lessons from the academy. Life is magic. Ether flows from life.
"Never mind. Just do not hide things from us anymore. You have proven yourself to be a friend by your help in tending to Iridan's affliction. You need not worry that we are ungrateful or frightened of small bits of sorcery worked about us. Now enough of this gawking. We are not getting any closer to Cadrus this way."
Brannis turned away from the sideshow at the back of the group and resumed his march. The men about him were less trusting of the hermit now, though, and were slow to turn their backs on him, but eventually had to return to their duty to keep up with their commander. Iridan and Roshan were the last to resume their march, hanging back from the rest of the company. Roshan took hold of Iridan's upper arm and held him gently at bay. With feigned innocence and a mischievous little grin on his face, Roshan seemed to rise up a finger's breadth, and there was a slight sucking noise from the mud beneath his feet. A heartbeat later, Iridan felt his own body lighten suddenly and his feet pulled free of the mud in which they had been mired.
"Since they already know about this little trick," Roshan whispered just loudly enough to be heard over the noise of the storm, "it is hardly a secret anymore. Let us take the day's walking in leisure and leave the mud to them."
He cast Iridan a conspiratorial look. There was a twinkle in the hermit's icy blue eyes that told Iridan he was not taking the matter nearly as seriously
as Branis had made it out to be. Iridan considered for a moment and decided that the hermit was right. He had just regained the strength to walk, and he had begun to tire some time ago. Complaining did not seem likely to buy overmuch sympathy from the men who had been carrying him in shifts, in addition to their own gear, so he had not mentioned anything to Branis. With the help of the hermit's magic, he would be able to keep up with the soldiers' pace as they slogged through the mud. A grin slowly spread across Iridan's face as he returned the hermit's gaze. Suspicion remained in the dark recesses of his thoughts, but Iridan found himself liking this strange new companion. The two men hurried their steps, splashing along the surface of the shallow, muddy pools of water, and tried not to attract too much attention as they caught up to everyone else.